Welcome to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, where you learn the best doubles strategies to improve your game and win more matches. I'm your host, Will Bocek. This podcast, my website, and my weekly newsletter all focus on the goal of better understanding the sport of doubles and helping players like you improve faster through actionable advice that you can use in your very next match. My goal is to provide the best doubles strategy resources in the world. And to do that, I study, analyze, and work with players at every level of the game, all the way up to the ATP and WTA tours. If you enjoy this podcast, I've created double strategy products that go even deeper if you want to take your doubles knowledge to the next level. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about them, or if you want to learn more now, go to thetennistribe.com/products. Here's today's episode. You're about to hear from a 2023 U.S. Open champion. So this past Sunday, the women's doubles final took place, and Erin Ratliff and Gabby Dabrowski beat Vera Zvonareva and Laura Siegmund. And Erin was gracious enough to come on the podcast just a few days later. So this was recorded on Tuesday, and I asked Erin all about her U.S. Open experience. So she and Gabby had only teamed up several tournaments before this, so she provides some good insights into things that clicked during the U.S. Open, how they kind of navigated those first couple of tournaments. They had some really close losses in Canada as well as Cincinnati, and I think you'll be able to take away a few insights into what it's like playing with a new doubles partner. And then I asked her about specific matches at the U.S. Open, so The kind of headliner for me was their match against Taylor Townsend and Layla Fernandez. It was in the quarterfinals. I was there sitting first row behind the baseline, and the atmosphere was just totally wild. And Erin and Gabby were up 4-1 in the third set. Then it got back to 4-all. The crowd was really electric. They were all, for the most part, rooting for Taylor Townsend, who was the only American on the court. And I asked Erin how she kind of dealt with all of that pressure of the roller coaster of the scoreline, as well as the crowd kind of being against them. So she provides some good insights into how she dealt with that, how she and Gabby communicated during that time, as well as how she dealt with nerves and typically deals with 10-point tiebreakers and kind of pressure moments. So there's some good tips here that you can take away and implement into your own doubles game for those close, tight matches, especially at the club level, since we're playing so many 10-point tiebreakers. And then after we talk about that match, we talk about Shea Su Wei, what makes her so good, how did Erin and Gabby beat her, and then the finals. How did Erin prepare for her first major final? She talks a little bit about the match, as well as what she does when she's nervous for a match and why she feels like that is a totally normal thing. And there's something wrong if she's actually not nervous. So it's kind of a counterintuitive approach that I really enjoyed hearing from her on as well. And then at the end, I ask her a few questions from some Instagram fans that a lot of you submitted as well. So without further delay, enjoy this conversation with 2023 U.S. Open Women's Doubles Champion Erin Ratliff. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today we have U.S. Open champion Erin Ratliff on. Erin, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you just played 2 days ago in the U.S. Open finals. You won. You are the 2023 U.S. Open champion with Gabby Dabrowski. How does that sound? Has it sunk in yet? What have the last 48 hours kind of been like?
No. People keep telling me that, like saying that, and I'm just,
you don't
a little,
believe him.
Yeah. But yeah, I think eventually, you know, I'm taking a few days to rest and try and recover. But yeah, I'm sure it'll sink in soon. I'm still like a little bit like, whoa. But yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. Is there, so you and Gabby teamed up in Montreal at the Canadian Open for the first time. And y'all won around there. Y'all won around in Cincinnati, made the semis in Cleveland, had some good wins. I think all three of your losses there were in third set, which is the 10-point tiebreak, right? I believe. So y'all had played decent, it seemed like, but was there anything at the US Open that you felt like clicked a little bit more so than some of those previous tournaments? Or was it just a matter of just getting more matches in together? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of everything. We had, obviously, a lot of the times these kinds of things take time. So every week we were kind of like, okay, like we're working towards, you know, building something together. And nothing's going to come really quickly. So that was one of our big things, was focusing on the process rather than like trying to get the wins right away, which is slightly ironic because then obviously we like won the US Open. So, I don't know really what clicked in at US Open specifically. I think I've said it a lot, but we're really honest with each other. We're really open. We're, upfront, you know, if I have a problem with something, I'll tell Gabby and vice versa. Like if there's something, or if there's something I'm needing on the court, then I'll like immediately tell her, even if it's in like a time of really high emotion. So I think, and also another thing that I've said, which I think is true, is we went through a lot of emotional matches together. Like our quarterfinal obviously was a big one. Like Louis Armstrong was full and there was like 20 people cheering for us.
Yeah.
It was really tough. I mean, it happens at sports, totally normal. I'm like so grateful that the stadium was full, you know, because it was it was a lot of energy,
it was a crazy atmosphere. Yeah.
Absolutely wild. So, you know, even going through that, you know, when you go through stuff like that, you become stronger together. So maybe that has something to do with it. And we had a lot of tough, you know, three setters in the first few rounds as well. We didn't get through a match in two sets until I think semis. I don't know if that's true, but
That's right. Because you had a walkover in the round of 16 and then, the first two rounds were three setters as well. So,
So our first three matches were three sets. So that's like, you know, absolutely not easy. And you got to go through a lot of stuff.
You said y'all are really honest with each other and you'll tell her if you need something on the court. Do you have an example of that? That's something that I've heard from players more and more over the last couple of years. I feel like a lot of players listening who play just club level tennis, maybe they do need something from their partner on the court, but they're afraid to ask. What's an example of that?
From like a tactic perspective, I would say like, I'm trying to think of an example that I would have.
Or maybe one from the US Open that you can share.
Yeah. Like if you, for tactics, like if you don't want to do, a lot of people don't want to do like I formation on their second serve ever. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? They'll do it on their first serve all the time, but then they don't want to do I on their second. Yeah. But then like, if you're playing with someone that's a new partner and you miss your first serve and they like stay in the I position, you're almost like afraid to be like, no, like go back to regular.
Yeah.
So that's an example. And then like, just like the way, it's almost just like the way that we support each other. You know, if someone told me to relax, I would freak out. Like, that's just like, I would love to be able to relax and just like be super chill, but like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that, that I think, that, I don't know. That's an example, I think.
No, that makes sense.
Chill out, like, you know what I mean? Like relax, blah, blah. But I actually think that's just a rule in general, is never tell a woman to relax, but also on the tennis court.
That makes sense. Yeah. I like the I formation point a lot because it's something I think with formation and location, right? Like a lot of times when I'm serving, especially if it's a pressure moment, you know, in the deuce court, for example, I like my wide one a little bit better. It's just more consistent, right? So if it's a pressure moment, I really want to make a first serve and my partner will call tee. And sometimes depending on the partner, I might feel weird about calling them off of something, but I've gotten better at, you know, saying, look, I need the wide serve right now because I need to make a first serve and I'm nervous and that's the one I'm comfortable with. So we're doing that. So I think
that happens a lot. That happened a lot with us.
specifically in, I think, the semi, I was having just not a great serving day. I just wasn't, there was something that was, my timing was off. It just wasn't happening for me. So the serves that normally sure. I can kind of hit all the serves, I think. Like, I have some favorites, but I'm good if my partner like tells me what serve to hit, and I'll just be like, okay, mm-hmm. we have a plan. But that day specifically, I couldn't find the wide serve. And that was the serve that I think was getting Gabby more volley. So that was like a time where I was like, hey, like, I know that the wide serve is what we're wanting to do, but I just can't hit it. So we're going to have to work on it and do it slowly until I can get to it. And eventually at the end, I was able to hit it. And I think if we had, you know, if we hadn't had that dialogue, I don't think I would have been able to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're trying to hit a serve you can't hit. You end up giving them a lot of second serve looks, which you don't want to do. So, okay. So I want to talk about some of the specific matches. So you mentioned the quarterfinal. So I was there, on the baseline.
Oh, really?
I was there on the baseline watching, in the first row there, and the atmosphere was just wild. It was electric. So y'all get to a third set. You're up, I think you were up 4-1 and had a point or two to go up 5-1 in the third set.
And then
obviously the crowd's going crazy for Townsend, being the only American player on the court. And you'll lose that. It gets to 4-2, then it's 4-3. And I think at one point you walked over to the chair and you asked the chair, hey, can you have the crowd or ask the crowd to be quiet between my first and second serve? Because they were actually cheering after you missed a first serve. Or maybe it was Gabby missing a first serve. I'm not sure. Which is a reasonable request, but you know, it's tough because it's New York and the fans are so crazy. And honestly, at that point, I thought, to be honest, I thought y'all were rattled and I was like, this is not looking good for them. And y'all turned it around though. Like, you brought your energy back up. I could see your body language come back up at the end of that third set. Talk about what was happening for you, what you were telling Gabby, what she was telling you, the communication with the coaching box. How did y'all kind of manage the emotions and get through that?
Yeah, I think it was it was definitely the hardest. Well, now, I mean, maybe the final, one of the hardest matches I've ever had to play, like with the ups and the downs and the roller coaster of emotions and just all the outside things that were causing stuff happening, you know, that wasn't just tennis. Because I think it was me serving and it was a couple times where I missed a first serve and it was like full cheering. And I was like,
that's not right.
I think that obviously I'm all for energy, having it electric. It's amazing, especially watching doubles, you know, like we love that. But if you know anything about tennis etiquette, you're not cheering in between first and second serve. So that was annoying. Yeah. And obviously I'm out there emotional and, you know,
yeah, whatever. No, it's a reasonable request.
So, how did we get through that? What were we telling each other? I would say we kept trying to be like, well, the other thing that was really hard was we couldn't really hear our box. Like, it was so loud that we had to walk over to them and literally stand right beside them at the towel. And then sometimes the ref was like, hey, you can't talk to them. And it's like, we're literally not saying anything. We're just trying to listen. We're just trying to hear what they're saying, you know, cause obviously we can't conversations. So that was really tough. They were just trying to tell us like, you know, enjoy the atmosphere that we're in and enjoy like the experience, which is kind of funny. Cause like, obviously we did, because I mean, I think I would have come, if we had lost that match, obviously it would have been heartbreaking, but I would have come, we would have come off it and still learned a lot. And I think the coolest thing about that match is we were able to win, but also learn at the same time. Which was crazy. I don't know if I can remember what we were telling each other. I think it was just like, hey, like, let's focus on the process. Because at 4-1, when Gabby was serving, we had a really rough service game to get like together. Like, she didn't serve great. I didn't volley great. I was like not poaching. That's like the first thing to go for me if I'm like nervous, you know, I'm just like stopping. I stop kind of moving a little bit. I think a lot of women are like that. But
Yeah, I think we were just trying to focus on like the process and each specific point, like a play that was working, and trying to listen to our box and ask them like, hey, what's working? Because it's hard to figure it out when you're like that emotional.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for, so a lot of the people listening are club players who play a lot of 10-point tiebreakers. In that match, y'all won in a 10-pointer. I think y'all were down 7-2 and came back and won 10-8. What advice do you have for people who have to play 10-point tiebreakers a lot? It's a question I get a lot. How do I win more 10-point tiebreakers? How do I not get nervous? Are there any routines or tips or things that you use in 10-pointers?
Not really. I think I used to just, you know, like you said, get really nervous for 10-point tiebreakers because it kind of felt like it was a coin toss. Like, didn't have to do as much with like the best tennis player at the end of the day. It was like, wait, if someone plays well for like 3.5 minutes, they're going to win. Just frustrating. But now I've just kind of learned to embrace it and be like, hey, like now is my time to be the one that plays the best for 3.5 minutes. And I think the bolder you are in those 10 pointers, the more success you will have. Whether that's immediately, like if you're bold and you get burned like down the line or something like that, or I think it's building something like for the future. So I think it doesn't matter what level of tennis you're playing. If you're bold in those big moments, it'll pay off eventually. So I think that's okay.
Yeah, I like that. What's an example of being bold early?
I think probably just doing something that's uncomfortable to you. So
yeah.
I think like if you're, because a lot of the times in those big moments, it's like, oh, you go with what's comfortable, you know, like if your favorite serve is the T, you'll go T, even if maybe that's not the right serve for the opponent that you're playing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times, like, you know, being comfortable, getting uncomfortable is what's going to make you be a better player. I'm trying to think of an example for us. It would probably be like, I remember there was a big point in that, 10 pointer where I think maybe we went, I was serving and we went like wide and Gabby goes, which like a lot of the time across your body, like if you serve to someone's forehand and they hit across their body, that's like the natural swing pass. So I'd say a lot of the time, if you don't go too wide, they will go cross court. So your partner will get a volley, depending on their stroke. But yeah, that's probably a little uncomfortable for me, you know, for us to do that together, but it worked in a big moment. So.
Yeah, because if they hit that late, they're hitting it down the line, potentially for a winner, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I like that advice of being bold earlier in the tiebreaker, because if you call that poach or whatever it is early in the tiebreaker, it's just 1 point. And if you lose that point later on in the tiebreaker, you might be in the same scenario. And that returner's thinking, well, they poached earlier in the tiebreaker. I'm going to have to go down the line again. And maybe they miss that return, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think doing it early is really good advice. So in the semis, y'all played Shaysu Wei. She, at the time, was 16-0 in Grand Slams this year, in women's doubles. Anyways, and y'all gave her first loss since she was the Roland Garros in Wimbledon champion.
Yeah.
What makes her so good, and how did you beat her?
First of all, that's an unbelievable statistic. and for her to be like, she was off
for like a year and a half. Yeah.
That's incredible. Comes back and casually wins 2 slams and then makes semis of the third one. It's pretty crazy. She's absolutely incredible. What makes her so good? You can't tell where she's going to hit the ball. It's really hard. She holds it till the last minute. She's very crafty, you know, her lobs, her like dips. You kind of don't know for a team if someone's coming to the net, you know, you don't know if you're going to get a lob or really low. And so that's really hard because you are on your, you're like on your toes, keeps you on your toes for sure. I don't know how we beat her. I no, I mean, I do know, I believe that we could win that match, but they're a really good combo because they're giving you completely different things. Wang is hitting hard and flat from the baseline.
Yeah.
You know, hard serve, all that stuff. And then Say is giving you all the crafty stuff. So you kind of, no matter who you're hitting it to, you're getting something different.
I think our plan was to just come to the net and get to the net and kind of like try to fluster them together. So I think that was our main goal for that match.
Yeah. Which worked out. Okay. And then you've got the finals. You play Siegmund and Zvonareva, who have been there before. They won it in, they won the US Open in 2020. Before you even get to the match, how did you sleep the night before? Or did you?
No, I don't. Yeah, I'm actually a really good sleeper. Like, I can be, you know, amped for anything. But it's funny, I'm not normally nervous until the day of. Like, I don't think about the match that I'm going to be playing. Like, if we had two, well, I don't know if we had one or I think one day off, but I'm pretty good about just, you know, doing my practice, doing my treatment, going back, you know, hanging out with friends, family, whoever, and then winding down. I don't have trouble sleeping before. What I have had trouble doing is sleeping after.
Oh, interesting.
Like, the adrenaline's still going. Like, I'm like so amped and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. I would just like a nice like 8 hour night of sleep.
Okay. So you haven't slept since Sunday then?
Almost. It feels like that.
So how did you feel going into it? You got nervous, I guess, the day of, and how did you deal with that and talk about the match a little bit?
Yeah, I'm always nervous. I think I always say, you know, my coaches know, everyone knows, if I'm not nervous, something's wrong, because that means I'm not caring, I'm not invested. Obviously, first final of a Grand Slam is a little bit different. How did I manage it? I just, you know, tried to do the exact same things that I was doing for all the other matches and just kind of embrace it. Like, that's literally what I've worked my entire life for, is to be in that position and to play on Ash in a Grand Slam final. I just had to remember that, you know, that's why, literally why I play tennis, and just try to embrace every moment. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything specific. Like, I did my whole thing, you know, I ate the same breakfast, I got coffee at the same time, I, you know, grip my rackets, listen to Taylor Swift, like all the same stuff.
Maybe that's the key.
That probably is the key. She gets me through everything.
So what about warm up before the match? So you and Gabby went out there. Did y'all have like 30, 45 minute warm up?
Yeah, we had 30 minutes on Ash. We played at 1 and we did it 11 to 11:30.
Okay. And y'all didn't change anything for your warm up, just normal?
Yeah, no, we did everything the same.
Okay.
Besides the fact that it was on Ash.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like for people who get nervous a lot, just stick to your routines. Do everything the same as if it were a normal match, even if it is a lot bigger match.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what my advice would be. I think, you know, at the end of the day, it is a game. It's my job and I'm playing a game, which I'm as my job, which I'm so grateful for. But, I just kept trying to think, like, hey, like, if you had told like little Erin that this was happening, she would just be so happy. So I just tried to think about that the entire time.
I like that. That's a good way to frame it. One thing I think about sometimes is, for you, it's different because you're playing in the US Open. For us, we're playing in adult tennis leagues. So for us, one thing I like to think about is if I lose this match, literally no one's going to remember in 3 months. For US Open, it's different. So it's good that y'all won, but that's a good way to frame it. It's like, if I had told myself 5-10 years ago that I had made it this far, then I'd be so happy with myself, like, regardless of the outcome of this match.
I think also another thing I like to say is, it's like a win-win. Obviously you win, and like for the day of the finals, we would win the US Open. And if we had lost, I mean, it's still a win. It's still a great 2 weeks. You're still doing everything, you know. My biggest thing is, like, I don't want to come off the court and have regrets about the way that I handled myself and the way that I, you know, played. And yeah, because that's the worst feeling in the world. That's a lot worse than losing, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I know you got to run, last couple questions. plans for the rest of the year? Are you going to keep playing with Gabby and try to make a run at the WTA finals? I saw y'all are up to 10th now.
Didn't even know that. Yeah, I mean, we're going to Guadalajara next week. So, yeah, we're set for the rest of the year. And so, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about next year after that.
Yeah, yeah, figure it out in the off season.
We'll see, but yeah, so Guadalajara, Tokyo, Beijing, and then not sure after that. But, you know, we're just going to try and keep doing the same things that we've been doing. And if we get to play WTA finals, we're going to be really happy. And
yeah,
if we don't, we don't.
Yeah. So the last few questions, these are from some Instagram fans. I put out a story this morning and a few people asked some questions. So this one's kind of open-ended. How do you best support Gabby as a doubles partner?
I think I just try to give her unconditional support no matter what. I like, you know, I said one time that one thing I really admired about her is that she's unapologetically herself all the time, which I think everyone can learn from, you know. Just giving her the space to be who she wants to be. And yeah, I think that that's, I don't know if that's like too open-ended, but that's my answer.
No, it's an open-ended question. So it's a good answer. Next one is, how hard is it to keep playing on a double salary? So obviously you, winning the US Open helps a lot, but, yeah, doubles players don't get paid enough, which is something that we're trying to help change. But answer that however you'd like. I know you probably don't want to talk too much about finances.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I've obviously been ranked relatively high for the last, 2 years or something. So, I mean, you're thinking about money, but you're not thinking about that much. It's a bit different when you're playing like 15Ks, 25Ks, 60Ks. If you're playing dominantly doubles at that level, you need to have some outside support, I think. Yeah. Now it's okay now. And obviously winning
the US Open helps. So last question for you, non-tennis related. Have you hiked the Lord of the Rings trail? I think somebody saw the New Zealand flag next to your name.
Yeah, good question. I haven't. No. I don't know if that's bad to say, but I've never seen Lord of the Rings. I'm not a big Wi-Fi gal.
It's okay. I'm not either. It looks like a cool trail, though. I think.
Yeah, it does. I'm sure I'll do it one day. I mean, I spend every December like as well. And a little bit in January in New Zealand. So one day I'll definitely get to it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Erin, thank you for joining us again. Congrats on the US Open.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good week and good luck the rest of the year. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Doubles Only podcast. If you're interested in diving deeper into any topics I discuss, I've created double strategy products that allow me to bring you more podcasts and other doubles content without relying on paid ads. I have ebooks and courses that help you make better strategic decisions during matches and become the smartest player on the court. Go to thetennistribe.com/products to learn more. You can also join my free weekly double strategy newsletter that includes video lessons and more on our homepage. If you want to connect, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or email me directly, will@thetennistribe.com.